Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the show today, we will look at the health effects of climate change. Research by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change revealed that climate change can affect human health directly, such as death and injury in floods and storms, and indirectly, including through changes in the ranges of disease vectors, water quality, air quality, and food quality and availability. According to experts, the change in climate is projected to increase threats to human health, particularly in lower-income populations. They say climate change-related health risks often impact marginalized and underserved communities who have the least resources to prepare for and recover from these disasters. Take a listen.
Mudslides in South Africa, flooding in Nigeria, and record drought in the Horn of Africa are just some of the weather-related disasters that experts say have occurred this year due to the change in climate.
My house is flooded. My community is flooded. People are suffering. No drinking water. No light. In fact, it's a terrible situation.
Experts say disasters like mudslides, droughts, and floods cause high water stress. This means an increased risk of contracting waterborne illness, widespread displacement, and devastated agricultural lands that can lead to famine.
I have never seen a drought like this before, because there is no place to work for our kids. But we pray to Allah to overcome this drought.
I have lost so much. Close to 300 goats have died. 50 camels have died. And they still continue to die.
Reports show that this is the worst drought the Horn of Africa has seen in 40 years. According to local officials at the Dadaab refugee camp in Kenya, the Somali refugee children that arrived at the camp over the summer were suffering from severe malnutrition. But that wasn't the only health concern.
We have a lot of cases with respiratory tract infections. We have a lot of cases of diarrhea. Measles outbreak has already occurred, and now we're vaccinating all new arrivals up to 29 years of age.
The World Meteorological Organization estimates that 250 million people will be affected by climate disasters by 2020. And the UN reports less than half of the African population has access to early warning systems to help cope with these disasters, and they are the most vulnerable to climate change.
Elroy Salam is a young Ghanaian photo artist. He has embarked on a journey to raise awareness about the impact of climate change on mental health. I spoke to Salam about his initiative.
Elroy Salam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for hosting me.
As a photo artist, you have covered different topics. You do a variety of work, but climate change is something that you have embraced through your work. What is your understanding of climate change?
So with climate change, actually, I've been exploring mental health for a while now. And then I was researching some of the things that affect mental health directly and indirectly. And then I chanced upon an article about climate change and then mental health. And there's always been campaigns and like protests and all that about climate change. But then humans, as we are, usually don't pay attention to them. And I've been a culprit. So it drew attention to the fact that like certain things are happening in the environment that I know are happening. But then I'm not putting my attention to it because I feel like it's not affecting me directly, although I've seen evidence that is happening. So with climate change, I feel it's just a natural phenomenon that we as humans have created for ourselves that eventually might cause our extinction.
Mental health is really where you started. What prompted you, your interest in mental health?
So in 2020, when there was a COVID-19 pandemic, I was going through certain things personally. Like I lost some of my clients in terms of work, and there was all this news about horrible things happening around the world, people dying and all that. And then it kind of affected me in a way because people were able to like channel that pain and anxiety and all that into their work. Some also had the time to like relax from work because they had a lockdown to do something personal for themselves. But I've always been an emotional person. So it affected me differently. And I got to the stage where I had this creative block that I couldn't even create like anything for myself. One of the things that contribute to mental health in creative, for instance, is a creative block, where there's a situation where we feel like we are not doing enough work and we need to do this. And is our work worth it? Are people liking what we are doing? Is it touching people's life? And all these things affect us as individuals. So that's when I started exploring my thoughts and my emotions and trying to find ways of like communicating that to the rest of the world.
How are you able to capture mental health in general and the impact of climate change on mental health through your lenses?
I use my personal experiences. For instance, there are instances where I had sleep paralysis and I've been anxious about certain things. So I look at myself and what I felt in that moment and try to recreate that. Initially, I started by shooting images of myself, but then it made me feel like I was reliving that moment all over again. So I had to recreate with a model. So I'll see from afar like how it looks. It kind of looks like a mirror of what is happening. So I understand it better when I'm using a model to show, like, exhibit what I'm trying to talk about. And with climate change, there was one instance where I was in a public vehicle and there were people arguing and talking about how hard the economy was. And these were people who usually work by the seaside. There was a ban on fishermen going to the seaside to fish because they're trying to, like, reserve more fish. So in situations like that, people were frustrated because they had no jobs. And frustration usually leads to all these things, like people overthinking about what they're going to eat, how they're going to live, and all this contributes to their mental health. This case about the seaside is actually because of higher sea levels and tides changing and all that. And these are all effects from the climate change. So indirectly, people are affected, their lives are affected, their jobs are affected as a result of climate change. So I looked at all these things and found a way to represent it.
So tell us about your project, Extreme Weather. When we look at that project, what do we see?
I actually got the inspiration from an article I saw online where they talked about how people, especially kids, are affected by natural disasters and other effects of climate change. So you realize I used a little kid as my muse for the project in a way to show people that you don't have to like grow to a certain level before you educate people about mental health and climate change. That's basically what you see in the work. There was a kid that was I made him represent the aspect of mental health. In a way, it doesn't look appropriate to use a kid, but then I think that's the message people need to know, that it's okay to talk to your kids about how they can preserve the environment and also preserve their mental health.
Choose one picture from that collection and describe it for us.
Okay, so there's an image of the muse with plastic bottles around his head with its like plants in it. And all these are like symbolic. For instance, the plastic bottles usually are also part of the things that contribute to the climate change. And we are trying to preserve the earth. And that's why the plants are in it. So that represents the nature. And then he had a band around his head that also signifies like how, I don't want to use the word bondage, but then usually when we are going through this mental disorder or mental health crisis, it's kind of like we feel a bit enclosed in our own world. That's what it basically represents.
What sorts of impact do you hope to make through your work?
I started this project like 2 months ago, and it was cool that I had someone to talk to it about and then show to the world, because I was always wondering how I can like share it to people, not just my audience, but outside my audience. So I felt this project should be something that will be timeless and not disposable. So I'll just tell people to tell their own stories and try to go deep within themselves to express what actually bothers them instead of doing what others want them to do.
And finally, Elroy Salam, do you have a message to share?
So I'll just tell people to tell their own stories and try to go deep within themselves to express what actually bothers them instead of doing what others want them to do.
That was photo artist Elroy Salam speaking to us from Accra, Ghana. Scientists say changes in climate pose challenges to Zambia's ongoing efforts to combat poverty, reduce food insecurity, and sustainably manage natural resources. Climate projections in Zambia include increases in short temperature and more extreme weather floods and droughts. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka.
As the world grapples with climate change, millions of poor people face increasing challenges such as harmful effects on health, food, water, and livelihoods. For the past 5 years, droughts and floods have become common in Zambia. Weather patterns have changed drastically. Edson Nkonde is the acting director for the Zambia Meteorological Department. He says extreme weather conditions are causing havoc in the country.
A lot of areas, for example, receiving over 100 millimeters of rainfall in 24 hours, which is quite huge, because those are some of the amounts some areas in Southern Province receive in a month. And you find that they have received that amount in 24 hours. So the results are flooding, flash floods, damage to infrastructure, damage to dams.
One of the biggest drivers of climate change is deforestation, which has reached alarming levels. According to a recent Worldwide Fund for Nature report, Zambia has the highest deforestation rate in Africa and is ranked fifth highest globally. Wood fuel or charcoal is used for energy across the country. Gladys Kabwe is one of the many charcoal traders in Lusaka. She argues that this is the only way she can make a living.
What has led me to trade in charcoal is hardship in life. I'm keeping 5 orphans. I'm also keeping my elderly mother, and I'm a widow.
Lino Emuela is an environmental activist. He emphasizes the need to address environmental problems in Zambia.
We need to see more of policies that are empowering communities that are dependent on wood fuel, supplying of wood fuel to urban areas. We need to see more policies targeting young people, targeting children on the importance and values of protecting our environment, of planting of trees, and so forth. So the biggest thing we need right now is implementation. Policies are there, and we've seen a lot of political will. What we need is more champions.
Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema says science has shown that the window to save the global environment is closing.
For developing and vulnerable countries like Zambia, which is among the least developed countries with multiple challenges, climate change brings an additional layer of challenges, an additional burden, and aggravates existing ones. Climate change makes it difficult for us to effectively address a number of socio-economic challenges in order to lift our people from high poverty levels so as to improve their livelihoods.
World leaders and diplomats framed the fight against climate change as a battle for human survival during opening speeches at the COP27 climate summit in Egypt on Monday. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres declared that a lack of progress so far has the world speeding down a highway to hell. I'm Kathy Short for VOA News in Lusaka, Zambia.
Dr. Maria Neira is the Director for Environment, Climate Change and Health at the World Health Organization. She elaborates on the impact of climate change on health and what can be done.
When you have natural disasters, humans will be suffering. You will lose lives, or you will have injuries or many serious consequences from floodings or from droughts and all of those natural disasters. Second, we know that the global warming will change the transmission of certain diseases like malaria or dengue, because the vectors will have better conditions to reproduce. And we know that fossil fuels is responsible as well on a big part of air pollution. And air pollution is killing 7 million people every single year. So the impacts are huge and are putting at risk all the advancements we have on global health for many years now. We are concerned as well about air pollution and how air pollution will be responsible for more
asthma cases, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, strokes, cardiovascular diseases, and those millions of deaths that Africa is already suffering because of the pollution levels of the air we breathe. But let's in positive, if we could change that, if you fight the causes of air pollution and climate change, you will obtain enormous benefits, particularly for the African continent. It's not up to the farmer to change himself or herself the access to the cleaner sources of energy. Governments need to invest on different sources of energy. A continent like Africa, you have a solar energy for free, and you have a very rich capacity there. The technology is becoming more affordable. Access to this type of solar panels are becoming now very easy for all of us. So if governments want to invest, that will be a common sense strategic investments that will protect human health, but in addition to that, it will be protecting the economy, the capacity to be more sustainable and to reduce as well the consequences of climate change. As individuals, there are little things that you can do, like recycle, you can reduce, if possible for you, the use of burning wood or vegetal coal to cook. If you have possibilities for something else, do it, because otherwise it's very pollutant, and that pollution is getting to your lungs and from your lungs going to the rest of the body. Instead of using private car, we can use a public transport if it's available, and if we can bike, we should do it as well. But I know that all of those measures, the most important ones, needs to be taken by mayors or politicians or high-level governments in collaboration with international community, and then choosing the best for their population. The leaders, they need to keep to their commitment not to go beyond the 1.5 degrees. That will be a disaster for the humanity, not only for the planet. It will be a disaster for us, for human beings, for our human health. In addition to that, they need to accelerate the transition to clean sources of energy, stop giving subsidies to fossil fuels that are costing so much, and then giving financial resources to those vulnerable countries that are already suffering the consequences of climate change, for them to adapt, to be better prepared, more resilient, and of course, cope with the consequences that climate change is already having in those countries.
That was Dr. Maria Nera, Director for Environment, Climate Change and Health at the World Health Organization. Somali authorities are scrambling to avert famine from a record drought that has affected near 8 million Somalis, half the population. The largest city in Somalia's southwest state, Baidoa, is bearing the brunt as thousands of families flee starvation in the countryside to displaced camps in the city. Aid groups and authorities are pleading for international help to prevent further loss of life, as Mohamed Sheikh Noor reports from Baidoa, Somalia.
The UN's World Food Program says Somalia's worst drought in nearly half a century has wiped out millions of livestock and made nearly 8 million people, including 1.5 million children, face hunger. The unprecedented failure of a fifth rainy season in a row has displaced more than 1 million Somalis from the countryside to the outskirts of cities like Baidoa. Many have no option but to walk, and the most vulnerable don't always survive.
Our journey took us 10 days, during which three of my children died of hunger. We have not received any aid for the 3 months we have been here. Our only source of income is the firewood we cut and sell. If we don't sell any, we are unable to eat and sometimes go hungry all night.
Children under the age of 5, the most vulnerable to malnutrition, receive what care is available at Baidoa Hospital.
We have experienced a severe drought during which we have not been able to grow our crops for 4 consecutive seasons due to lack of rain. Our livestock has been wiped out and my son is suffering from malnutrition.
Hospital admissions for children are rising quickly.
Malnourished children are at an alarmingly high rate. We were admitting about 150 to 200 children per month. Now the number of children per month has reached 300 to 400.
Somalia's southwest state government is working closely with aid agencies to lessen the impact of the drought and try to prevent famine. State Minister of Humanitarian and Disaster Management Abdel Nasser Abdi Arush is coordinating relief efforts.
We're on to another challenge.
Our goal is to ensure that no famine occurs in this country, and we expect God to help in our efforts to ensure that it does not happen. It is important that we do all that is possible to prevent people from dying of hunger. As a government, we have been entrusted with the responsibility by our people.
But in the makeshift camps for displaced, there are few visible signs of adequate aid for drought victims. The last famine in Somalia in 2011 killed a quarter of a million people. If more food aid doesn't arrive soon, aid groups say another famine in Somalia could be even worse. Mohamed Sheikh Noor for VOA News, Baidoa, Somalia.
Zimbabwe became the first African country to approve the once every 2 month injectable HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis drug in October. Research carried out revealed that cabotegravir, CABLA injections every 2 months were safe, well tolerated, and highly effective in reducing the risk of HIV acquisition among vulnerable populations such as transgender women. According to the World Health Organization, CABLA may be offered to people at substantial risk of HIV acquisition as part of comprehensive HIV prevention approaches. Following Zimbabwe, Uganda approved the injectable drug this month as additional optional drugs for preventing HIV/AIDS infection in the country.
The new drug is called cabotegravir, or CABLA for short. It's a form of PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis, which can reduce the chances of infection. The Minister of Health spokesperson says, since its inception, PrEP was available in the form of a pill that needed to be taken daily. Approval of CABLA means that PrEP can now be offered as an injection that can be administered monthly. This thus increases the available choices and options for persons who use PrEP exposure prophylaxis. Tinashe Rufuruadzo is the Director of Programs, Management and Government with the Global Network of Young People Living with HIV, also known as Y-Plus Global.
The decision by the Medicines Control Authority of Zimbabwe to approve the CABLA as an HIV prevention method is lauded by the communities of young people in all our diversity globally. CABLA joins the dapivirine ring as the only long-term HIV prevention methods available with minimal and well-tolerated side effects and are highly effective in reducing the risk of HIV acquisition.
The dapivirine intervaginal ring, also known as DPV-VR, is an HIV prevention option for women that has had similar success as CABLA. The ring lasts 28 days before it can be replaced. Michael Gwasira is the editor of Health Times, a local online publication that covers health issues extensively. He gives an update from the Zimbabwe Population-Based HIV Impact Assessment, or ZIMFIA.
Right now, our current HIV prevalence stands at 12.9% as of the 2020 ZIMFIA survey that was conducted in Zimbabwe, which means we have approximately about 1.23 million people, adults, that is, living with HIV, that is, as of 2020.
Rufuruadzo hopes the new drug will gain wide acceptance.
We hope that all other African countries can follow suit and be intentional in providing more HIV prevention options for young people in all our diversity to make informed choices. We remain hopeful that the same momentum will be retained and CABLA made available, accessible, affordable to all who need it when they need it.
Kwasira echoes Rufuruadzo's positive view on the new drug. He says that oral medications are usually taken on a daily basis, but they have attracted social stigma and also fatigue for patients, leading individuals to sometimes forget to take their daily dose. Now, there is an answer to that problem. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zhinawashi from Harare.
About 422 million people worldwide are suffering from diabetes, with the majority of them living in low- and middle-income countries. Over 1.5 million people die each year from complications from the disease. According to the WHO, 24 million people in Africa are living with diabetes, with the number predicted to rise to 55 million people by 2045. Maureen Ojambo reports.
As the world marks World Diabetes Day today, Monday, the World Health Organization is looking at the milestones achieved so far, a year after the launch of the Global Diabetes Compact. The Compact is an initiative that aims at strengthening efforts around the world to both reduce the risk of diabetes and ensure that all people diagnosed with the diabetes have access to equitable, comprehensive, affordable, and quality treatment and care. With this year's theme being access to diabetes care, the WHO is calling on an increase in education for both the public and health professionals. Silvana Luciani is the chief of the Non-Communicable Diseases, Violence and Injury Prevention Unit at the Pan-American Health Organization in Washington, D.C.
We're all too aware that diabetes is a growing public health problem and that worldwide the number of diabetes people with diabetes is projected to quadruple and expected to reach to 500 million people by 2030, calling attention to the urgent need to really scale up interventions such as education, prevention and control and primary care services.
With diabetes type 2 cases rising rapidly in sub-Saharan Africa, the WHO says the response efforts are constrained by the fact that more than one in every two people on the continent living with diabetes have never been diagnosed. In countries like Kenya, diabetes prevalence is at 3.3% and predicted to rise to 4.5% by 2025. Luciani says health professionals should ensure the public is more educated on both type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
And with the COVID-19 pandemic, we know that the situation for people living with diabetes has worsened because the risks for COVID are much higher in those living with diabetes, but also because the health services were significantly disrupted, which meant that many people with diabetes lost access to continuous care that they need to optimally manage their condition. So now more than ever, we need to raise awareness and education on diabetes.
Diabetes is the only major non-communicable disease in which the risk of dying early is increasing rather than decreasing. In Africa, the modifiable risk factors that lead to diabetes in Africa include being overweight and obese, sedentary lifestyles, unhealthy diet, smoking, and alcohol abuse. The WHO is calling for increased access to diagnostic tools and medicines, particularly insulin.
And for insulin and other diabetes medicines and technologies, we're calling on governments to make them much more affordable and accessible to all those who require it. So we urge governments, please use the PAHO Strategic Fund to make insulin and other diabetes technologies much more accessible and available.
As a way of ensuring that diabetes is controlled globally, WHO member states during the 75th World Health Assembly in May supported the creation of the first global targets for the control of the illness by 2030 as part of the efforts to strengthen and monitor diabetes responses within National Non-Communicable Diseases Program. And in Africa, the WHO says it's working to integrate diabetes detection and treatment into primary care, including the training of healthcare workers. They are also calling for investment in products needed to control the illness, such as insulin, glucometers, and test strips. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linoch Mudu in Washington, with producer Mokhbil Yabaro. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.